Hey, this is James from ThrillPunk.com.
And this is SurvivalPunk.com's Couch Potato Mike. I completely derailed my own ass right off the beginning. This is going to be a great episode.
Couch Potato Mike.
Couch Potato Mike. Going upper crust with it this week.
Yes. We're going to run through the opening intro super quick because we have another interview. Yay!
Yes, we have a very special guest coming up on the show.
If we can get his name right.
Yeah, Mr. Will Mayer.
Yes. After I called him Will Major 17 times, he's like, yeah, bro, my name's Mayer, like the city council person. I'm like, fuck.
Okay. That's all right. DP down in Florida, he could, you know, he feels his pain.
Yes. DB.
All right. He runs a survival school, doesn't he?
He runs a survival school. He's a tracker. Cool guy. We'll have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Met him through the Survival Punk Facebook fan page, which is an awesome way to get in touch with me. Facebook.com/survivalpunk. I tend to like get along with a lot of the regular posters. And you know, if you send me a friend request, I'll accept it if I see that you like Survival Punk. So you can look me up or whatnot.
I would give those people one piece of advice. Don't ever talk about baby formula.
Oh, yeah, titty milk.
Yeah.
Fun times. So, tell us about our sponsors.
Well, our sponsors can all be found on the right-hand side in that little banner at survivalpunk.com, where you'll find great people such as jmbullion.com, home of the best place to get all of your precious metals, your gold, your silver. I hear they even sell platinum.
Gold, silver, platinum. Best pricing on the internet and free shipping. Check them out, jambullion.com, banner right-hand margin. Next up is campingsurvival.com.
Campingsurvival.com, home of all your bug-in and bug-out needs, where you can get fish antibiotics. Same stuff they give to humans, just marketed for fish. Works just as good.
The life straw and much more. Next, we got Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee. The great people there that all their coffee is fair trade, organic, grown in Thailand. Their workers are paid a fair wage so they can support their families.
And proceeds go to help a local orphanage.
And their coffee is amazing.
It is dynamite. It is fantastic. It is the better part of waking up.
Yes. And if you've not tried their coffee, I highly recommend the Mexicali. It's my favorite at the moment. Next time I can order, I'll order more of that. My previous favorite was the espresso because I like a dark, strong coffee. But the Mexicali has some dark, strong, and spice kick, and I like it.
Mm-hmm. So find that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com for Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee right alongside of wellfoodco.com.
Wellfoodco.com, the home of the Paleo MRE, the Carne Bars, grass-fed whey protein. Everything's organic, good quality, high-sourced. And just good people, John Wellborn, his wife, Rob Wolf, Paleo Solution author, created a bunch of the foods there, like the Carne Bar.
Rob Wolf is married to John Wellborn?
No.
Oh, you said his wife,
Rob Wolf. And Rob Wolf.
Well, you didn't say the and part.
Yes.
And I would also like to give a shout out to the Greening Out.com's podcast because he won 5 weeks of free advertising on our show.
Right. Dan, I love how we gave that away to Paul Wheaton and then totally forgot like the next week.
And you should also check out Paul Wheaton's website.
Permies.com, yeah.
Permies.com, yes. And Greening Out.com. All right. So without further ado, I think we should go ahead and bring up the interview. I hope you guys like it as much as we loved bringing it to you. And here we go.
All right. That was a great interview this week, Mike.
I laughed. I cried. It became a part of me.
Yes. So as always, if you have a product to sell and you want to sell it here on the glorious Survival Punk podcast,
all you need to do is just drop a line, an email over to james@survivalpunk.com, and he will work out a great deal with you. He takes meat, precious metals, barter, money, bitcoins, all of that sort of thing. Do you still take sexual favors?
No.
Okay. All right. James at survivalpunk.com. where if you want your stuff to go to an ever-growing and wonderful, wonderful audience.
Yes. And if you really want to support me, you can join the Survival Punk Army.
Yes, because the Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes. You get exclusive content. Me and Mike are actually working on a Knock Out the Park podcast. It'll only be available to the people in the Survival Punk Army.
Absolutely. And we mean it this time. This podcast, it will actually get recorded.
Yeah, yeah. I'm doing notes. Have you started getting notes already? No?
Yeah.
No? Yes. So, yeah, notes on the podcast.
So it's my great pleasure to welcome on Will Mayer today. So, Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Tired, but good.
Hey, tired happens.
Yeah. So, just to let everyone out there know, who is Will Mayer?
Will Mayer is a 37, about to be 38-year-old Navy veteran who happens to run a survival school based off the whole zombie apocalypse theme.
Which will really resonate with our listeners and myself, because, just a quick thing. What got you into survival in the first place? What clicked that switch in your head?
Well, I basically grew up, my father, he was an Eagle Scout, I hung out with a bunch of Vietnam vets growing up in the Everglades, so survival and just being raised went hand in hand. I learned so many skills just, you know, hanging out with my dad, hanging out with old Vietnam vets, camping out in the woods and everything, and lighters wouldn't work, and so I had to learn how to start a fire without a lighter. Rains would happen all of a sudden, our tent screwed up, got to make a shelter, let's do this. Run out of food, because you're in Florida, there's bears too. Bears got your food because you didn't hang it up high enough. Mm. Can't go hungry. You got to learn how to hunt and survive.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah.
And then continued right on into the military.
Right.
Military schools teach you how to survive, and I'm like, oh, I got this. Later on, leading up to what created Zier was one of my battle brothers was up here, and we were having a nice Father's Day shootout in the backyard shooting zombie targets, and one of our civilian friends was commenting about how we all went through a survival school and how cool it would be if we all got together and created one, and so Zier was created.
Now, what does Zier stand for?
Zombie evasion, resistance, and elimination.
That's good. It was actually zombies that got me into survival. You know, because I was a big fan of zombie fiction, zombie movies, and all that stuff. And just saw, like, sort of chance of Will, I took it to the next level where I actually was, you know, like, the zombie movies, they kind of get you thinking, and then you have to make that leap to the next step that, you know, you gotta make this shit serious. So I blame it on right. Zombies. That was the thing that got me there.
Zombies, because a lot of people ask us, they're like, do you really believe that zombies are gonna rise up from the dead and everything else? And I straight up tell people, to me, a zombie is any person or people who want to take what is mine, harm my family, take my land, take what I've worked hard for.
Yeah.
And with the way they're going, I mean, who knows? We could be facing a red dawn 2 minutes from now. Right. Having the survival skills on hand lets me be better prepared for that.
Exactly. The same thing with me. I tend to use zombie as a metaphor for a disaster. So, you know, that tornado was a zombie, right. Or, you know, hordes of biker people could be zombies, you know. So it's more of a metaphor, but zombie movies are good.
Oh, yeah, zombie movies, I have quite a collection. I enjoy watching them. I laugh at them because it seems like everybody doesn't know how to kill them. It's like, shoot the head.
Yeah.
Go straight for the head. You kill a zombie. Yeah. I mean, the same thing is said about terrorists. Aim for the head.
Yeah, it's pretty much kills everything.
Yep.
That is the one thing. That is the one good thing about how to kill a zombie. It works just across the board.
Yeah, if you're not sure, just shoot him in the head and you'll be fine. Yeah. So tell me more about your survival school. That's pretty badass. I would sure like to make some classes.
Hey, we would love to have you up, and I know my wife has talked to you a couple times about me coming down there to you guys, and maybe bring a little tracking skills to you all.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that.
So that's the next thing I've got. So you're really into tracking. So what you know? How would someone go about getting into tracking? Obviously, you said you teach tracking, so that's a good thing. But how would you suggest people start getting into it? Like, what was your path to get into tracking?
My path getting into tracking actually started off with hunting. Just being able to track my game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the deer that I want to get, because I'm not one of those guys that sit up in a tree stand. I'm down on the ground with bow in hand.
You're a bow hunter.
I'm tracking them.
Awesome.
Pardon?
I was just surprised you're a bow hunter.
Oh, absolutely. I believe in giving my game a fair chance.
And that means, sir, that I have the utmost respect for you. I have the utmost respect for bow hunters. I mean, that takes a certain amount of skill, patience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to take God only knows how many things into consideration. And plus, like you just said, it gives the animal the fair shot. I mean, I know guys that have gone out there with like $5,000 hunting rifles with the laser scopes and everything, and at that point, that's not really hunting, that's killing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's more boring. That's all that is. When I was in the military, they handed me a nice expensive rifle and said, there's the bad guy. Out here, the deer, they don't have any training at all. It's them versus me. And if they skunk me, they skunk me. I hope to bring Bambi home, put them on the plate, feed it to the kids. If not, I'm sorry, we're having McDonald's, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, the tree stands, I just don't understand, because that is just, that's hoping that they come by, and then, oh, hey, I sniped you. I'm not about that. I want to give them a good chance, and it allows me to become more connected with them as well.
Yeah, I'm fond of bow hunting deer. I've not got into it yet, but the whole sitting in a tree stand has never appealed to me at all. It's just mind boring. I can't sit there. Like, if you're tracking something on foot like you're talking about, I can't imagine anyone getting bored that way. I mean, your brain's firing on all cylinders at that point.
Absolutely. You're taking so many different things into consideration when you're tracking an animal to hunt it. You are starting to think like the animal thinks. You're very noise disciplined, and it crosses over well into hunting humans as well. Tracking, you can use it for hunting, but it also allows you to do search and rescue, which is a course that I'm hoping to be able to take next year with some awesome people down in Texas to actually become SAR certified.
Nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, for me, an opportunity came to me through a friend of mine who had taken a visual tracking course by the guy that the U.S. Army calls on to have them train their people. He's actually a former Green Beret named John Hurth, and he owns a company down in Louisiana, and there was a five-day course, and I looked at my wife and I said, can I go, please? And she said, well, you can track animals. How different is it to track humans? And my whole world, guys, just changed.
Hold on a sec.
I can't.
Okay. So, having some technical difficulties. One moment.
All right.
You're good. Go ahead.
Okay. I can't walk outside and not see sign.
Yeah.
I just start looking at it right away. I now carry a flashlight with me religiously just to look at a tread, to try to get the picture of it. It just changed my whole worldview, and it has actually made me a better hunter. Although I haven't been out hunting yet because the season's way off, I'm able to track the game as they move right now.
Yeah.
So I'm building up a pattern. Okay, this is how you guys are doing during the relax season. Obviously, there's no rut. You guys are chill. But I'm seeing where you're going. I'm seeing what's going on. I'm seeing, you had a baby. I want to make that.
you know. So it just, the worldview just blew up.
Oh, yeah.
And they call it a sickness, and I'm happy to have this sickness.
Yeah. It's one of the better ones to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it forces you to get outside. You obviously can't track inside your house. Tracking in a city is extremely difficult. Tracking the way that I know how to do it gets you out into nature. For some people that just live in the city that have taken the course, I know they go to parks now.
Oh, yeah.
Just to do it.
Which is a side effect of greatness right there.
Now, what are some tips that you might have for people getting into tracking for the beginners?
The best tip that I can give for people that want to get into tracking is don't do what a lot of people do, and that's get a copy of the old Army Field Manual on tracking. Don't do it. It was put together by people sitting in a room, not by people actually out there in the field.
Yep.
I personally would recommend the Combat Tracking Guide by John Hirth. Again, that's the guy who runs the school that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
He's lived this. This is what he does. Mm-hmm. He was a Marine. He went on track, and he just kept going to other people. Teach me more about tracking. Teach me more about tracking. And he'll tell you straight up, every class he has, he's learning from us as well, which is awesome.
Oh, that is awesome. I know that old Army Field Manual. Anytime you walk into any kind of Army surplus or outdoors store, anything like that, and you tell them you want to get into certain things, that's like the first thing that they try to shove down your throat, too.
Yeah. I hate that. Like, if you go to a bookstore and look for survival books, a lot of it's just that Army Survival Manual, just reprinted over and over and over, which...
Yeah.
Ugh. I stay away from that.
It's good to a point. However, you know, I have a friend who is a troop leader for Boy Scouts, and I was flipping through one of the Boy Scout manuals, and I remember flipping through my dad's old one. It's the exact same stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I still think to this day my favorite survival... What's that?
I look at it, and it's like there's changes. We can upgrade some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You're listing things that we don't have any access to anymore, but there is stuff we do, and you need to upgrade. I mean, they don't even have paracord in there.
Oh, for the love of God.
Yeah, it
I don't know about you
update.
Guys, but I live with my 550.
Yeah, it's carried around everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that needs to be rewritten, which, and at the same time, there's a lot, like... I remember seeing some really, really old Boy Scout books, and there's just some really good stuff in there that you just, like, you know, turn of the century camping, just, it's not the same anymore. Some of that really old, like, aluminum Boy Scout cookware was really nice, and I want to get my hands on some.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah, some of the old stuff is good. It was better made. I mean, back in the day, we used to make things out of steel right here in America rather than aluminum stamped somewhere in Hong Kong.
Right.
Give me the steel. I know it's going to last longer.
Oh, God, yeah.
But at the same point, some of the old, some of the new stuff, like, you know, you read an old Boy Scout manual, they're talking about canvas tents. I don't want the canvas tent. That's too heavy for me. Give me my nylon tent.
Yeah.
And I gotta know how to repair it.
Yeah. You're one of your fellow Ohioites, Dave Canterbury.
Is that the term? Ohioites,
yeah. I love Dave. I met Dave up at one of his Pathfinder events one year. I kind of disagree. Like, he tries to go too old school, like a reenactor sometimes. Because he has his canvas tarps and all this stuff. I'm like, dude, a steel nylon tarp would be much, like, it's not, you know, if a spark lands on it, it's going to catch on fire, but I'd much rather carry a steel nylon tarp than, you know, a 40-pound canvas tarp.
Right. I'd rather have my poncho and my whoopee than, you know, lugging around some big heavy canvas tent.
Yeah, yeah, a giant, you know, queen-size, $200 virgin wool blanket, you know, or, you know, a poncho and a wabi, yeah. So, I love Dave, but I kind of disagree with him on some of this stuff. He's too obsessed with old school stuff. And it has its place, but I don't want to do period reenactment. I want to have, like, you know, light, good gear.
Well, apparently you and the Discovery Channel have a lot in common then.
No.
Uh-huh. Oh my god. Sorry, couldn't help it.
I tried to watch a new episode of Dual Survival, and I was like, oh, this sucks so bad. I hate both these
guys. when they switched Dual Survival and Cody was taken off, I mean, that was it. I was done.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it when it was Dave and Cody.
Yes.
That made me laugh.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was, I mean, there's actually good chemistry there, and the new guy Joe and the new hippie, I'm like, I just don't feel it.
Yeah, I especially love that one episode where David set a snare and accidentally caught a skunk with it.
Yeah.
As soon as Cody saw it, I mean, you could tell that was not a put-on laugh. That was just a genuine, hearty laugh.
Right. Oh, I mean, Dave did some stupid stuff, you know, but hey, it happens. Cody, he likes to be more down-to-earth and careful, and I respect that, but... You know, I would tend to be a little bit more like Dave. I'm going to take the risk because I want the reward.
Yeah. I mean, I'll admit, Cody's books on survival are the best books I own on survival. Like they're entertaining, they're informative, and they're just kind of down to the point. You have a survival school, and I'm kind of getting off track here, but that's what we do here. Have you ever actually tried the... the water trap, you know, where you dig a hole and you put the little cup in the bottom and you line it with, like, you know, transparent plastic and have it condensation down.
Oh yeah.
I've seen people actually try that, and it's always like you bust your ass for 5 hours digging a hole and then you get a thimble full of water, and then it just, like, the payoff to me, I've never seen it work out that well, where
Oh no, you don't really get much more than maybe a quick sip. But sometimes that quick sip is like the ego boost that you need. I did this, I got water. Yay.
Yeah.
I'd much rather that than that episode with Joe Tedai saying he's gonna drink his urine. It's like, dude, really? You're claiming you're a Green Beret, and you're claiming you're a Marine, and you're going to do that? That's rule one, no.
Oh, God. I saw Mike Hawk give his wife, Ruth England, his urine.
His pee, yeah. That's, wow.
Which I thought was stupid, because he said it's okay to drink the first time through, you know, because your body can take it that first time, after that you can't. So why would you give her your urine? Why don't you just drink your own damn urine if she drinks her own damn urine?
It's TV.
Because you're ruining her urine now.
Yeah, whatever.
It doesn't matter. She wound up dehydrated and throwing up, and they had to bring the camera crew on with Gatorade and everything else.
Oh, my God.
That was the first episode of Man, Woman, Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was a stupid mistake. I really would love to meet their survival instructors and be like, did you really teach them to do that?
Yeah.
Now, I did see on an episode of Survivor Man, though, Les Stroud, he actually did the water trap thing that you just described with his own pee when he was in the Gobi Desert. So he at least tried to distill it.
Right.
Yeah, he tried to evaporate a lot of the bad, which, okay, I'll give you a thumbs up for that, but just drinking it straight and didn't need to be slept.
Yeah, I hate all the survival TV. Like, it's entertaining, you know, because you're in it, so you obviously, there's like, you have to watch it, and then you're like, oh, why did I do this? I knew it was going to suck.
Right.
You know, like...
I watched it for the comedic factor, and then I'm sitting here and thinking, it's like, wait, what do I have to do to get on TV so I can show people how not to be stupid?
They won't let you. They won't let... The producer's like, you know, I have a friend... that was on an episode of Doomsday Preppers, and I watched that episode because he was in it, and I was like, why'd you let them do this to you? And he was like, you know, they bought me a cement mixer. Okay. Whatever.
Right. What did they do to him?
Oh, they made him look like an ass clown. I mean, they made him look like an idiot. You know, I'm like, did you really? He's like, no, I didn't really do that. And they're like, you know, they had a scene where he shot Tannerite in front of a wall, and his dad was supposed to be on the backside of the wall, seeing if the wall would, like, hold up and not crush and kill him. And he's like, yeah, my dad wasn't really back there. Yeah, he's like, that was bullshit.
Yeah, nobody's that stupid, are they?
What?
I know that episode.
Yeah.
I saw it. I was like, no, that can't have happened. They can't be that dumb.
No. That's my buddy Dave. But yeah, that whole episode, it was terrible.
it was highly weirded.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
I would never be on Doomsday Preppers. They can my ass.
They have the audacity to call it reality television.
Yeah.
Hey, what reality?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, who's reality at this point?
Oh.
All right. Ugh.
So back to tracking. Do you have any advice on, say, mistakes that people make tracking or... just sort of weird little tips that you don't think about.
Oh, there's stuff that that you find that people commonly overlook.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the key things, and I learned this early on during my 5-day course, is not resting my eyes. Oh. You got to be willing, if you're out there by yourself or you're with a crew of people, to be willing to say, hey, I'm losing it. I'm losing the sight. I can't see it anymore. My eyes are getting too strained. I mean, think of it this way. You're reading a book for 8 hours straight. Mm-hmm. You're going to forget what you read.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
You got to be willing to take it upon yourself and say, okay, I need 10, 15 minutes. If it's just you, sit down, close your eyes. Let your eyes relax.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that they stressed upon, because I could see the sign, and I knew I saw the sign, and they're like, are you sure how far it's going? It could be ghost sign, and it's like, okay, I need a break. And they're like, good call. Go ahead, fall back. You do need a break. You've tracked for a mile. Even Special Forces, we rotate around already, and you just kept on. You do need a break. And it's like, well, I was just on it. You know, I was gung-ho about it. I wanted to keep going. But taking a break is one of the most important things. If you start losing the sign too much, stop, take a break. Go back to the one spot that you know was good and relax.
That makes sense.
And then find it again.
You got to know your limitations.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. I've totally been reading a book, and then 5 pages go, and I'm like, I have no idea what just happened. It's time to stop.
And I've done that before. I've done the exact same thing, and I've actually I've backtracked several pages to where I knew, okay, yeah, because I don't remember anything between this page and that page.
Yeah, and then stop. And then stop reading, because you're like, I need to take a break, because I can't read anymore.
Uh-huh. And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. All right, so it's well, go ahead.
And the other thing, too, yes. don't do a nickel cluster. If you're going to learn from a tracker, and they're like, well, we're going to be in the classroom, avoid that tracker.
That makes sense.
You don't want that tracker. You want the tracker that is geared up, ready to go. If they got a recommended kit, you want to see their recommended kit on them. You want to see them outside with you, right there. And if you're not sure on something, call them up and say, hey, I'm not sure. Because, I mean, if somebody's willing to teach tracking, they got to be good enough to say, okay, I'm right there to help you. And then showing you what they're seeing so that you can actually learn yourself.
Yeah. To me, tracking seems like one of those skills that definitely you would need a mentor for. You know, like, you can teach yourself a lot of stuff, but you learn so much faster learning from someone, because they're immediately there to, like, correct you and learn from. Like, if you teach yourself in a book, you can teach yourself all wrong, you know, like with languages. You could have the pronunciation all wrong and just not be speaking the language at all.
They'd be like trying to learn Spanish from Google Translate.
Yeah. Or anything
exactly.
Google Translate.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll be honest.
You need somebody there who speaks it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll be honest. There's the reason they call me Couch Potato Mike on this show, and by they, I mean me and James.
Yeah. All three listeners.
It's, yeah, including Ralph at the FBI. No, the reason I'm called that is because I spend the vast majority of my time watching a lot of television, either on the couch or on the bed or whatever. Now, I'll be honest. The ironic thing is I'm in a house that's sitting on 28 acres of land right now.
I hate you.
Yeah, that I don't get out and use as nearly as much as I need to.
Yeah, I drag you out as often as I can.
Mm-hmm. But where I'm going with this, most of my experience and knowledge about tracking actually came from another television show called Man Tracker. Did you ever see that one?
Yep.
Yeah, that got me and my wife watched the hell out of that show as long as we still had access to it. Now, how much of that did you actually find factual? His techniques and whatnot.
They were pretty good. They were pretty good. I know the show that you're speaking of. But some things, it's like, how in the hell did you just do that one? Mm-hmm. I don't see the sign. I'm looking for the sign myself. If I can't find something on, say, Netflix or Hulu, I will search the internet and I will find it. And so I have, when I went down and I came back home, I actually went ahead and I hunted down some episodes. I'm like, dude, no, this isn't happening. You didn't do this. This is Hollywood. Hollywood's telling you where the track's going.
hold on 1 minute, Will. You idiot, why didn't you turn your phone sounds off?
It's supposed to be.
This is awesome.
Episode has been wrought with technical difficulties.
Yeah, basically, he had some alert on his phone just now that made the sound of the TARDIS from Doctor Who. So that is now.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
While on silent. Somehow it rang while on silent.
So, yeah, it sounds like the Doctor landed in the middle of our damn podcast.
Wow. That's an Easter egg for...
Oh, my God, that is awesome. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Your wife might get a chuckle out of that one.
Oh, God.
I'm sure of it.
All right. So to switch gears from tracking, we're going to talk about your other big passion, and that's obstacle course races. So,
oh, yes. I love them.
Yes. And I've ran one. So the first race I ever ran, I decided to run Tough Mudder. Mm-hmm. Like a 10, 11, 12-mile race, something like that. Never having run a 5K, never having run like a long-distance race, I jumped in right to the 10K, and it kicked my ass, but man, was it fun. And so the next question, so what got you into the obstacle course races?
Truthfully, what got me into the obstacle course races is a shipmate of mine. We were working together, and he comes to me, and he says, dude, I want to do this Warrior Dash race. And I said, what the hell's Warrior Dash? He's like, it's a mud run. I said, what's a mud run? He's like, we go through obstacles, you know, kind of like what we did in Boot. I said, oh, okay. I have bad knees. He's like, it'll be all right. Come on, let's go do this.
Yeah.
I went, and I had a blast. I got the bug right away.
Yeah.
It was a Warrior Dash 5K last year. I got the bug right away. I come home. I'm searching for thousands of others. I found Battle Frog. I called some shipmates of mine. I was like, guys, what's up with this Battle Frog? Is this legit? And they said, absolutely go. I said, okay. And I paid my box tops, and I went 15K. You know, pretty much all I do is I just work out myself, standard PT, you know, keep myself in shape. 15K, it kicked my ass. Hardcore.
Well, I bet.
But I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I said, I'm going to do this again. And now, I'm sure you already know by now, I'm geared up, ready to go. Things got messed up at Battle Frog headquarters. Some cities lost some races. They took away Sundays. I got nothing but positive things to say about Battle Frog, though. They're great people. It does seem like you're going to have to come up here to run with us because, unfortunately, Nashville was one of the ones that got cut.
Oh, really?
God.
Yeah, unfortunately. But here's the thing we did. Rather than having the 5K and the 15K, they said, no. Screw that noise. 8K, 22 obstacles.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't know much about that. Is that a lot of obstacles to cram into 8K?
Yes. I went over in my head remembering all the obstacle courses that I went through in the military. That combined three different military obstacle courses into one.
Holy
shit. I was going to say that the 12 miles of Tough Mudder I ran, I think there was maybe
10 major obstacles. Yeah, and then there's just, like, miles of mud. Like, you're just annoying, like, there's a whole mile of mud you had to run through, like, twice. you know, but, like, actual obstacles, I think there's only, like, 10 or 11. So, like, one-ish per mile.
Huh. Right.
22 is insane. That's in 8Ks.
Now, what kind of obstacles was it?
You know, it was, like, walls to climb over, there was this, like, mud freaking slanted, like, slippery slope you had to climb up. And then my favorite was the half pipe. So, like, you know, a half wall that's, like, 15 feet high you had to run up.
Oh.
So lots of fun stuff like that. And then there's, like, sort of mud hurdles. It was, like, you know, 10 feet up in the air of mud. And then you go down into, like, a pool of mud. And then you climb up the other side. And that was fun.
That sounds sticky.
You know, muddy, you know, I was covered in mud.
It starts weighing you down. And hear me, I'm crazy. Battle Frog has a BFX. It requires that I run that race at least 3 times.
Mother.
To get that medal.
Wow.
Good God. That is just awesome.
Yeah.
But hey, it's cool. It's cool. My redheaded girls have stepped up, all of them, and said, we're going to run one of the 3 with you. I said, thank you. Yeah. So I'm not running a single one of those by myself. They're going to be right there with me. Their first time ever doing it, and they're going to be right there with me.
Nice. Aww. Nice. Yeah, I need to start training for races here soon. God, now that it's getting nice and warm. So, and that leads me to my next question. And it's something I thought about after running Tough Mudder, and I'm sure that you've thought about it. There's a lot of lessons to be learned for survival by running these obstacle course races, right?
Absolutely, and that's part of the reason why in Zier we actually have the Zier Mud Runners. I talked to my wife about it, and I said, you know what? A lot of these people, they're sitting on the couch. They don't get out and do anything. They need something fun. Let's train them how to run an OCR. And she says, okay, explain to me how running an obstacle course race can be tied into survival.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, let me tell you, honey, not only do you have to be able to build up that endurance, because in a survival situation, who says when you're going to be able to stop and rest?
Mm-hmm.
You need the endurance. You got to have that inner drive to put one foot in front of the other and keep on going. You got to be able to pick yourself up, pull yourself up, climb a rope if necessary, do this carrying your bug out bag, which is going to weigh. You can get that bug out bag unless you want to be one of those people that carries it. There's people that run around with the camel packs full, 3 liters of water. That weighs you down.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want that added weight with the mud. The mud is heavy enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, and the cool thing about the obstacle course race is you go in. If you're lucky, you're going with some friends. If not, like when I did Battle Frog Pittsburgh, I didn't know anybody. I wound up making tons of friends because there they were in the struggle, in the mud with me. I'm reaching down to pull them up. They're reaching down to pull me up. And that shows that in a survival situation, be careful, but do look for unity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everyone was helping everyone, you know, when I ran the Tough Mudder. Like, people were helping each other over the walls. It was, like, it was made that you had to cooperate. Like, I was running with a team, but the way it broke off, like, there was one part where you had to carry someone on your back, then they had to carry you on your back, and then you had to do, wheelbarrows for, like, 50 yards, you know, back and forth.
Right.
In the mud?
No, this is dry. This is dry at this point.
Oh, okay.
So you know, I got there and I was running with. What's that?
I said you were nice and dry at that point. You're lucky.
No. The ground was dry at that point, so it wasn't mud we're doing that in.
Okay.
But when I got there, you know, I had 4 other teammates, so they paired up together, and then some guy came up. He's like, "Oh, you need a partner?" I'm like, "Yeah." So I hopped on his back, and I'm like, "Oh, I feel sorry for you, buddy." And then I carried him. And so, you know, it was cooperative. You know, everyone was helping everyone out.
Mm-hmm.
And
Which reminds me, I read this article one time on air about why people that do CrossFit are so close-knit together, and it's a throwback to that physical exertion creating a bond between people, and it's the same thing with these things. You know that intense of a workout, that intense, you know, it just builds bonds between people. You make friends, like you said.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I mean, here's me, a Navy guy, proud. I wound up running with a guy who flunked out of Air Force Parajumper School. He lost his shoes. I'm wearing a bandana. I took off my bandana. I said, here, make this into a shoe. Because, you know, we were going over some pretty sharp rocks. And, you know, it was just, everybody's like, you guys stuck together. I was like, yeah, well, the pack that we started with just kind of up and left him. I noticed he didn't have shoes. I got to stop and help him, brother.
Yeah.
And I stayed with him. And people are like, wow, that's really what this is supposed to be about, and you did it. This is your first time. It's like, yeah, we're brothers. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's amazing how bonds like that can be formed.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, me and you, our entire friendship formed over the bond of survival in a car.
Yeah, being homeless. So I wore my good wool hiking socks to run Tough Mudder, and the shoes were ruined. So, the 10 miles or whatever ruined the shoes. I threw them, because they were a crappy pair anyway. So I tossed them, but the wool socks did perfect at keeping my feet not, you know, disgustingly, they did a good job, you know, keeping my feet fairly dry. So I would definitely do that again, to wear, you know, good wool socks. I've been thinking about see if I can get Gore-Tex sock liners or something. That I think that would be really good.
Then you'd be good to go at that point.
Yeah. And so when I was running, I saw a good number of people that were running barefoot, which
I was about to ask you if anybody ever does that kind of stuff barefoot.
In a way, that does make a lot of sense. Humans are made to run barefoot, and in the mud and stuff, you're not going to ruin a pair of shoes that way. So, have you seen people run barefoot?
I'll run barefoot in my backyard, going to an obstacle course race, not sure of the environment.
Right.
I feel more comfortable with something on my feet, you know. Just for safety purposes.
Right. I wouldn't do it unless I trained hardcore for it. But, man, some people rock it.
Get some Cody Lundin feet action going on, and then maybe.
Yeah. My mitochondria are not that strong yet.
Yeah, well, Cody Lundin's mitochondria are made of diamonds and titanium at this point.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure Cody Lundin could take it and be like, what, there was a sharp rock I didn't even notice.
Right, yeah. Sharp rock would take me out.
I don't know, on that one desert episode, it kind of took his toll. He wound up making a pair of flip-flops out of old tires.
Yeah. And you made a good point about the mud runs being fun. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't want to work out, they don't want to be active and stuff, because, you know, going get on a treadmill is fucking boring. I'm not going to lie. You know, no one likes that.
Right.
I'd rather run. I prefer to go trail running. That's a lot more fun to me.
Right.
You know, run out in nature. So, and one of the things that I push really hard is fitness with survival. Because a lot of people, you know, they may have 5 years worth of food. They may have 15 million rounds of ammo. But, you know, they're 400 pounds, and they can't move in an emergency.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people, the last thing that they prep is their own bodies.
Yeah, and I want to make that change.
That should be the first thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's survival. If your health's destroyed and you're sick and you can't move, then you're not really surviving.
Yeah, like in that Glenn Tech book, the 299 days, 199 days, he was talking about he had the storage unit, and he was moving all that stuff up and down those stairs into the storage unit, and realized he was so freaking out of breath after one trip up the stairs.
Right after your mental game, you know, being able to put your head in the right spot, it is definitely physical.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're unphysically able to handle it, go ahead, have your millions of rounds of ammo. I'll just wait for you to pass out. Guess whose ammo it is now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't understand that. Like, you just see so many preppers and they're just not taking any, you know, they may have, you know, food storage, but it's probably shit and, you know, it's not healthy for them. They're not doing anything. I saw an episode of Doomsday Preppers where the guy was like so fat he was riding around on like an ATV because he couldn't walk. Oh, that's not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
On a prepper show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just retarded.
Yeah.
That's beyond ridiculous. That's, yeah.
Well, yeah, there was that one dude that, I mean, he easily weighed, I don't know, I'd say 450, and he's all like, I am an EMT, and I'm going to cut the baby out of my wife if everything goes bad. And he's like, dude, you're out of breath just kneeling down.
Yeah. Yeah, that shows. Whatever.
Full of shit?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to pull that punch.
Yeah. Yeah, just completely off that topic.
I love it when the horribleness of something just completely derails
yes.
you.
So you're big about something that I'm also passionate about, and that's passing skills on to kids. Because there's a lot of kids out there that... I fear for the generation, to be honest. You're a little bit older than me, and technically, and I hate to say this, I'm in the millennial generation. I'm 33. I looked it up because I thought I was Gen X. I really did. And then I looked it up, and they're like, no, you technically, I'm in like the very edge of being a millennial, which I hate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
I'm sure you probably don't know AOL before it came on the disc. Then
no, I remember those discs that were in like they just magically popped up in your mailbox every Tuesday. You open the mailbox and there's an AOL disc, and you know we used them for coasters because they were just everywhere.
Oh my god, those were like right. Those are the free frisbees we used to get.
Free frisbees, yeah. It was like what do I do with this AOL disc? You know, there's coasters, there's frisbees. You know, you throw them at your little brothers, hit them in the head.
Cheap ninja stars,
yeah.
That's exactly, yeah. They're cheap shuriken.
Yeah, but it's badass that you are sort of passing on these skills that you've learned to younger people. So tell me about that.
To me, it's something I have to do. Like I said, I learned from my dad. I learned from a bunch of old non-vets. I learned from my grandparents. And to me, I would ask them, why is it so important that I learn how to do this? And they said, so that you can pass it on. I mean, they were the original pay it forward people for me. Mm-hmm. And so now I have to pay it forward as well. When we graduated tracking school, one of the most important things that he said to us was, tracking is a dying art. Go forth and teach people now. Don't let it die. And we were talking about the old Boy Scout manuals and stuff, some of the stuff's good, some of the stuff needs to be updated. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things. We need to say, this is the way we used to do it. Here's a better way. Now, what's your turn? Hopefully, there's an even better way that you can pass along. And it's just a continuing course of learning. When we stop learning, we're dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I'm teaching my kids, you know, how to build a debris hut, I'm learning from them, too. Maybe there's something in their technique that I haven't applied to myself. That works better. So by passing these skills along to them, I'm continuing the knowledge forward as well as I'm gaining knowledge from them. And it's a beautiful thing.
That's what I love.
It's one of the most important things I can do.
Yeah. You said it for yourself and you said it for the guy that taught you tracking, that you learn from your students. Sometimes you'll hear people that are, and you can't see them, but I'm making quotation signs, you know, experts in their field, you know, and they refuse to learn anything, you know, and the true master never stops learning. I mean, you're learning from everything right. All the time. That's what makes you good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hail back to Masamune Matsu, who the Japanese swordsman who wrote the Book of Five Rings, and he said, every opponent I face is teaching me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so every new student, every new person that I meet, I talk to, I'm learning from them, and hopefully they're learning from me as well. It's just the way that it should go. It should be a continuous back and forth motion. I learn, you learn, and we're both growing.
Yes. Yes. I can't remember the exact quote, but Bruce Lee had one like, take in all knowledge, accept what's good for you and reject what's bad for you. Just in the James terminology. And I'm like, that's it. Yeah. You know,
don't
be closed-minded. Take in everything. If it works for you, use it. If it doesn't, you know, let it go.
Yep.
If you're an observant person, the most fierce opponent you'll ever face will teach you how to beat them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so the last thing I've got before I'll let you go, because it's late there for you, and I've been up like 24 hours. And this has been going on for a couple weeks, so it's gonna touch on your Viking lifestyle and the spirituality there. A little quick background. So I've been in AA for about a year and a half now, you know, and you go into AA, they're like, you know, you got to find your higher power. You got to find some, you know, spirituality. And right. I went in, you know, pretty much as an atheist, although I hated the term. I didn't like, because for me, atheism, a lot of the atheists are just like really pissed at God. You know, they're just like, oh, I hate that motherfucker because he won't hook me up or whatever. You know, it wasn't so much that they didn't believe in a higher power. It was just that they hated that higher power.
Just like the movie God's Not Dead, which was actually a really good movie describing exactly what you're just talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that was my problem. I didn't hate a higher power. I just didn't really believe in it. And I don't know what I am anymore. But like I said, I'm open to all suggestions, you know, and I'm sort of trying to find that higher power to keep me sober, which is a year and a half now.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And St. Patrick's Day was a hard time because I love Guinness, like you won't believe. And I'm like, oh, I could just drown in it. But I didn't. I stayed strong and so back on course.
I still believe you were kidnapped from an Irish orphanage as a baby.
Yeah.
He probably was.
I could... I would be in heaven in Ireland with, you know, all the green hills and the Irish Guinness and the... every girl's a redhead in Ireland. So, yeah. Me and you have that in common, Will.
Nice.
So, tell me about the Viking lifestyle you live and your spirituality there.
Well, let's see. My evening comes by way of just my grandparents and my ancestors. Basically, we were very strong into our bloodline, and I followed more of a Wiccan path at one point, and a lot of it became very funny and definitely not my style. I am a warrior in my heart. Obviously, I volunteered to join the military. So, defending my people, defending my beliefs, defending my country is first and foremost, and that led me more to heathenism, where being a warrior is kind of what you're supposed to do. It's just how you're supposed to live. You're supposed to live a good life, be a good person, be self-reliant, be honorable, hospitable. And these are tenets that I can immediately get behind because they are what I live. Before I even knew about the nine noble virtues, it was how I was living. And so heathenism and my Viking blood called to that. And so that's the course that I walk now. It's a... Every day is a spiritual thing for me. When I wake up in the morning, I get up and I say, well, I don't know if I'm going to get into a physical conflict or a mental conflict, but either way, I'm going to bring my A in, and I hope the person does it too. And this is just that driving force and to do good for all. You know, if I meet a Muslim and I can tell that they're not radical, you know, they ain't got no problem with me sitting there eating my ham sandwich and see the infidel tattoo on my arm and say, oh, okay, you're an infidel because you're eating a ham sandwich. Yay for you. I'm Muslim. Right. Not my thing. I'm going to be cool with them. I'm going to embrace them as a brother, and I'm going to learn from them. One of my best friends, who is like a brother to me, is devoutly Christian. And we joke, because I'm sure you've seen the meme with the militia standing around talking about a Christian, an atheist, blah, blah, blah. I saw it, and I shared it to him one time. I was like, we have to make this happen, because we can do this, you know? And it also tends itself to my survival lifestyle, because I do have to be self-reliant, and I do have to persevere in my belief that my way of teaching people and learning from them and the skills that I have will help me survive later on.
Yeah.
So it's all encompassing. I can't separate one from the other. You know, and the people, I actually have gotten the nickname Viking Will because of my beard and my Thor's hammer. It was like, he's a Viking.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, pretty much. You anger me, you better hope I don't have an axe in my hand at times. Because yeah. I might cleave you.
Huh.
Oh, I know how that goes.
That's, yeah. I mean, who doesn't like Vikings? I just, who doesn't?
I know people that don't, actually.
That's, well,
you know,
people that had their villages burned down, maybe. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, it seems like, you know, you're in the Navy, you're a Viking,
mm-hmm.
and you live in Ohio. Do you feel the ocean calling to you? I mean,
thankfully, I can walk right out back and there's a creek.
There, yeah.
Close enough,
yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, I grew up in the Everglades, so it is kind of different. I'm used to being able to, you know, back when I was a kid, I could hop on my skateboard and go there for water, and I can go swim forever. But here in Ohio, which is where I was born and I came back to later on in my youth, it just, you know, it's home. It's home. I know I can find water. When I went to the Navy, boom, obviously there's water.
Right, yeah.
And
funny story.
Okay, my time in the Navy's over. Let's go back home.
Yeah.
I know where water's at.
Right, right. I don't know how our musical tastes are, but you should look up Lars Fredriksson and the Bastards. He has a song called Married to the Sea. Definitely, mm-hmm. definitely one of my favorite songs. And because he's sort of a can't, you know, he's a rambler. He can't stay put. You know, he's like, sorry, ladies, but I'm married to the sea.
Right.
Definitely a catchy, good, you know, punk song worth checking out.
Yeah, I'll look that up. For sure.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on. You were definitely not boring. This was a good interview.
Oh, thank you. What? I hope I made you laugh a few times.
No. So, you know, your wife was setting up this interview, and she was like, "Ah, you know, I don't want to call you out here, but Will," she was like, "you know, Will's afraid he might be boring." I'm like, "I don't think so. I think we're gonna have a good time on this interview. Right? We're gonna, just from like the little bit I know you from Facebook, I'm like, I think we're gonna get along fine. It's gonna be a fun interview." And it definitely was.
Oh, yeah,
that is the first time I've heard somebody say it to the fucking.
I do got to say one thing.
What's that?
Couch two. You got 20 acres out there, man. Come on. I got 36. I know it like the back of my hand.
Oh, I know all that. I know all that land back there really, really well. I just never do anything with it.
You need to go back out and make sure that you're still on track with it.
I drag them out there usually in the spring and the summertime. And then was it last year I got you to climb a tree for the first time?
Last summer we went down into that land and I literally climbed a tree for the first time in my life.
Yeah, I can't pass a tree without trying to climb it. I can't pass anything without trying to climb it. I'm like a fucking monkey. I want to climb everything. Which is ridiculous because I'm afraid of heights, but I have to climb it and then, freak out.
I didn't know you were afraid of heights.
You got to show them how much fun it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've got, I have video on my YouTube channel of Mike climbing that tree. A whole video of us hiking down there in his woods, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
All right.
See, we got to get him out in the woods more. I got to get down to you guys. I got to take you out. I got to show you some track lines and get you guys tracking too. Like I said, your world will change.
Oh yeah, and I think
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and my land down here, the land that this 28 acres, it is kind of a hunter's paradise. You'll find all manner of critter on my land.
Oh, nice.
It's not uncommon for me to wake up, just walk out my front door in the morning. I have seen, I wish I had a dollar for every deer I've seen around here.
Hmm.
I mean, one morning about 2 years ago, I came out and I shit you not, this had to have been at least a 12-point buck. Just standing 50.
Beautiful.
Within 50 feet of my front door, in my front yard. And he just looked at me, and we just locked eyes and just froze there for a good 30 seconds. Then I coughed, and he took off like a bat out of hell, but still.
Of course, yeah.
Right. But see, that's the beauty of it, man. I mean, that's the nice thing about having a nice chunk of land is you can experience that most city people never will know about.
Oh, see, and I grew up in the heart of in the heart of Nashville, in a very urban part of town. I mean, I'm like born, dyed-in-the-wool city boy, but I married a country girl.
Mm-hmm.
I married a country girl and moved out here. Do what?
Yeah, he's like, she rescued you.
Yeah, she really did.
Yeah.
she really did. She saved my life. Yeah. Best damn thing that ever happened. She's our producer on the show, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not in here right now. She's in the other room making sure the kids don't be so loud that we can't hear you, but still.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, you sound about as tired as me, Will.
I'm pushing it a little bit.
Fine. Yeah, it's 10 for you. It's 9 for me, and I've been up since 2 o'clock last night.
Oh, that's not good.
No, I have a part-time overnight job, so I'm usually up at nighttime. And I should have been asleep today, but I had too much to do. So
he abuses his body and sleep cycle on a very regular basis.
It's yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Until Survival Punk pays me more. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. It's been great having you on.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was a really good interview.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoyed that. He had me laughing quite a few times during that.
Anytime I can bash Doomsday Preppers, more power to me.
Oh God. Yeah. That show needs a damn bashing. That show needs a damn Holocaust is what that show needs. And not to spike their ratings. I just wish they'd cancel that show. Like cancel it, burn every copy that ever existed.
Yeah. So if you like this sort of thing, you should advertise your product on survivalpunk.com and the podcast.
Yeah, and if you like the podcast, you should become a member of the Survival Punk Army.
Yes, which you can find at Survival Punk Army. You can find, I should buy that domain.
Survivalpunkarmy.com, you should.
Yeah. Survivalpunk.com, you could find all the information to join the Survival Punk Army, where you get exclusive discounts to 12 vendors online. You get ebooks. You get exclusive content from me and Couch Potato Mike.
Yes, including an upcoming podcast that we're going to be doing. Should we even mention what it's going to be about?
Plagues in our past.
Right, and the global population scare.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah. You can do all that by becoming a member of the Survival Punk Army. And you know why? Because the Survival Punk Army wants you. But all in all, I think that was a pretty damn good show.
Yes.
And I did enjoy that interview. Despite the fact that you kept calling him Will Major for a week and had me all screwed up and I couldn't find him on Google.
And on that bombshell,
it is time to end the Survival Punk Podcast, episode 53 now.
Yes.
And, 53. Yeah, it's 53.
All right.
Yeah, So, for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Survival Punk Burnetsky. Use guys.
Yep, use guys. And just remember, when doing an interview, make sure you work out all the technical difficulties at least an hour ahead of time, or the TARDIS will land and the doctor will try to save the interview.
DIY to survive!
Use guys.